This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Listening to America's Web Radio, we appreciate you listening in. It's time now for Medicine on Call, and Dr. Elena George is on the line calling in, and it's all yours, Dr. George.
Good morning, Dave. Thank you for your patience this morning. I just wanted to first touch base about what's going on with the Ebola virus. Can't pronounce it this morning. What's your take on the transfer of the patients here to Atlanta?
I guess I'm not sure I know what you're talking about.
Well, I mean, just the fact that we've now allowed the virus to enter.
Oh, Ebola. Oh, I'm sorry. I misunderstood you.
I know. I just couldn't pronounce it this morning.
What do I think about it? I think it is a situation that we have with almost everything today, is that I'm not sure, you know, the old saying about getting a half-truth, I'm not sure we're getting a tenth of the truth or a quarter of the truth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're the expert. You know more of the dangers of the transferring. I had some questions that I would like answered. For instance, before they first started talking about bringing the doctor in, it was that they were going to fly him in and he would land at Dobbins and then go to Emory. Well, they didn't ever say how it's getting to Emory, and I just happened to turn on television and there was the ambulance taking him to Emory.
Mm-hmm.
Unescorted, which I found very peculiar, and then the nurse that came in, she did have a police escort, not a showy police escort, but there was a police presence as she was being taken to Emory, and obviously the doctor got out of the ambulance on his own steam. She was taken into Emory on a gurney. It's like I said, personally, I can handle the truth a lot better than I can handle the half-truths. And I, you know, they kept telling us, oh, well, Emory's the best in the world, and we know how to do this, and we know how to do that. Well, why not just fly a team over, take them out in the middle of Africa, and set up a tent and go to it, and isolate them that way? Why did they need to be necessarily brought into the United States? And then I get this stuff, well, they're American citizens. You know, charity begins at home, and I appreciate what they were doing, but, and it was all their choice. It wasn't like they were forced to be there. So you tell me, how big an exposure, how big a problem is it having Ebola here in the United States?
Well, from my perspective, it's one of those viruses that we don't know what's happening with it. I mean, it showed up back in 1976, and since then, it's not the same presentation. It was so virulent, 90%. Mortality rate, that it basically appeared and disappeared so quickly it never had a chance to spread outside of the place that it popped up in. So it was Uganda first, and then it had been just sporadic. This is the first time that it's actually been around long enough to infect this many people and to be past these different countries. We're up to five now. I know people don't mention this too often, but now, you know, Saudi Arabia has also had a case. And I can't remember the other. Saudi Arabia is one. I can't remember the second. I think it's Morocco, the second Arab country that this is affected. Nigeria was the most, one that people really keyed in on because it's so populated, populous country. I agree with you. I think that this should have been handled in one place if you could do it. You could fly an entire team from the CDC, from Emory, there, and actually reproduce the same hospital situation in an area that's already affected without risking any kind of accident. We're all human. Who knows what could happen? Accidents do happen. And they've gone from the CDC saying it could never happen in the United States to saying, well, if it does happen, we can control it. That's a big change in the way they're talking about it, because they put us all technically at risk. It takes one person who doesn't know that they're infected to actually infect somebody else. I mean, the incubation period for this is 21 days, and you can be symptom-free, and then, bam, it hits you, and then within hours, you could be dead. But in that time, you could kiss somebody, cough in somebody's face, sweat on somebody. It's all about body secretions. And I just really had a major problem with all these airlines continuing their flights in and out of the affected countries. That's where you really can't control what's going on with this. And it's just been very, a very calm response to it, knowing how deadly it is. That's my major problem. And Emory is a level 2 containment center. And normally when you deal with something this deadly, you go to a level 4, which is like CDC. They have that. Why couldn't they go to the CDC at least in order to take care of these folks instead of putting them in a general hospital where, you know, everybody potentially can be affected by this? So it just seems like they're just tempting fate a bit with the way they're handling it. And that's segueing into this whole Common Core curriculum versus medical care in this country. This is all about global interests. It's no longer about really doing what they say that they're supposed to do in terms of the education system. And we talk about Agenda 21 on the show occasionally, but people need to understand exactly what that is. It's a UN-driven system that is like an octopus taking over every single thing that it can touch. Education is one arm of it. Well, so is Obamacare, and so is socialized medicine. And people are being led down the path of, let the government take care of you. But the government has a different mindset or a different agenda than somebody who's looking at it from an individual perspective. Because the good of the many will outweigh the needs of the few. And it's all about the collective and the collective rules, the collective, the end point is all about centralizing everything, centralizing thought, centralizing action, centralizing the delivery of services. And it's not equal. They're telling people that it's all about fairness. It's all about bringing the, you know, taking away from those that have it to give it to those that don't. It's being like a Robin Hood meme that's associated with it. But people, I think, now are waking up to the fact it's not what they thought it was. I really didn't know what Common Core curriculum was until I started to look into it. And all I know is if the government gives you money for something, they're going to tell you what to do with it, and they're going to run the show. We can tell you it's happening. It's gone on. It's like a template. And in this case, they're changing the curriculum. First, it was taking away history, social studies, so that we didn't have anything to hold us together. And demonizing what makes America, America. Listen, every country has had some sort of crazy past that you really, it's not the best. Let's face it, we're not alone in that. We have issues that we, you know, slavery, all sorts of things that are not good. However, we've moved past them. And to keep harping on things that divide us and make us weaker as a country, in order to control us, to me, that's where we're moving. I don't know if you have any family members or know anybody who is actually in the school system. Do you know? Do you have anybody there?
Oh, yeah, my wife.
So, oh, my God. So you're like an expert on this. I mean, I've talked to teachers who are just miserable, those who actually want to teach. What's her take on it?
There's two things on it. She's opposed to it. However, it's like many things, the guise of doing it it's like everything else. It's misrepresented, and the guise is that if she deals or she used to deal with kids transferring in from not only other schools but other states, and quote unquote Common Core made some sense in that. Some schools teach totally different almost different things. Like in Texas, we always had Texas history. But you move into Georgia, you don't necessarily, you don't take Texas history. In fact, I don't even think you take Georgia history anymore, but or if ever. So the idea of kids, you know, say every kid in the sixth grade having a quote-unquote core curriculum is not totally bad. But what they did was they, like I said, it's like everything else. They misrepresented it. That's not what you're getting. What you're getting is dumbing down of our kids from high school down to the first grade. And that's a terrible situation. And telling the teachers what they're going to teach and what book. And it even goes further than that. Not only Common Core, but I'll throw one at you that the schools used to make, you know, they would make money so they could do extra things and not have to go to the government by having, you know, drink machines and or other things that they could sell. The new, in Fulton County anyway, the new superintendent has, not until after everything had already been ordered by the schools for this year, has said, and this comes from Michelle Obama, that nothing can be sold at a school or kids cannot have access to anything after school, be it popcorn to Cokes. And again, it's the end results is very bad. Do you mind if we segue back to Ebola for a second?
Sure.
You said something that really, really, really struck me. And that was that in the past, it had been controlled to one or two cases.
Well, more than that, but maybe a dozen or so. But because it was so toxic,
right,
it killed people so quickly, they couldn't spread it to other people.
So, and we have heard over and over and over again from supposed experts, I guess they are, that, oh, well, you don't have to worry about it because it's only transmitted by someone touching or the fluid, the body fluids you
right.
get. But let me ask, you said something very important. We have, what, 900 or 1,000 now confirmed cases?
Over
1,000,
yeah.
Over 1,000. Is that indicative that it has transformed into possibly a virus, airborne virus?
Well, these people were actually in affected areas. So they were in Sierra Leone, they were in Liberia, they were actually in the areas that the virus is active, and they left there. So they're actually transporting it back. They didn't just get it on an airplane, per se. Right? So that's not what happened with those people. But people should know that there is a study in Canada that used pigs and monkeys, and they put them in separate cages. They infected, the pigs, and the virus was transported. Sorry, the monkeys transported to the pigs, and they weren't touching each other. So that implied that case or that experiment showed that it was most likely airborne. That means droplets, coughing, sneezing, just traveling through the air and then having it enter the respiratory tract of the animal that got sick and then infecting them, like pneumonia, that sort of thing, or pneumonic plague, where you can actually, the droplets are transported in the air because they're so light that they can, that's the worst thing. God forbid that ever happens, because then you really can't control this, because it's just people being around people, not physically contacting them.
Again, I may be crazy, but, well, I tell you, I am crazy, because we need to take a break right quick. When I come back, I've got one other question to ask you, and we'll be back with Medicine on Call and Dr. Elena George right after this.
This is Dr. Elena George with your health tip of the day. Did you know that nasal stuffiness can cause snoring and decrease the amount of oxygen that your body receives? A decrease in oxygen to the brain can cause problems with memory and concentration, and in severe cases, it can cause stroke. A decrease in oxygen to the heart can lead to high blood pressure, and in severe cases, a heart attack. Nasal stuffiness can be caused by exposure to irritants such as dust, mold, pollution, and chemicals. It can also be caused by exposure to trees, grass, and certain foods, such as corn, wheat, eggs, soy, milk, and various meats. Medical treatment with nasal sprays and or antihistamines that don't cause drowsiness can alleviate the congestion. It is important not to use over-the-counter spray decongestants, since they can be addictive and actually make breathing more difficult. See your doctor for a complete evaluation of your nose. Please join me on Wednesdays at 9 a.m. for Medicine on Call. This is Dr. Elena George.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
Come on, follow Sniffles to Atlanta's go-to center for breathing easy. Do you suffer from chronic sinus headaches, recurrent sinusitis, facial pain or pressure, and chronic congestion? Well, balloon sinuplasty just could be the cure you're looking for.
Follow me and breathe easy.
FollowSniffles.com. We treat the problem, not the symptom. Chronic sinus symptoms, gone. This could be the cure you're looking for.
Follow me and breathe easy.
This proven in-office procedure can have you breathing easy, back to work the next day, and it's done under local anesthesia. Get lasting relief, a quick recovery, and start breathing easy again.
Follow me and breathe easy.
FollowSniffles.com.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
And we're back with Medicine on Call and Dr. Elena George. And we do have some interesting discussions off mic. Thank goodness we're not saying off camera. This is not one of my better hair days. But anyway, I'll let you get back to Common Core Ebola, and one other thing on Ebola that I was going to ask you is, you know, what do they never say what they do with the stuff afterwards? For instance, you go in, do they burn the hazmat suits after they've been in and seen these people? Did they burn the inside of the ambulance that carried these people? And your point was, well, they were wearing hazmat suits, but how do we know something didn't leak out, sneak out, whatever, out of the hazmat suit into the ambulance or into the plane? And we keep getting these assurances that everybody knows what they're doing and we're taking care of it. As I recall, the CDC doesn't have a real good record lately of taking care of anything when they find boxes of infectious diseases just sitting in a closet.
I really have to say I had a moment's pause when the head of the CDC got on TV to give his take on the Ebola virus, knowing that just a few weeks ago he was testifying about and apologizing for the accidents in their lab about anthrax and smallpox. It really didn't give me a warm, fuzzy feeling to have him talk about it, I got to say. And as a physician, I got the first email a couple of days ago on what to do if I see a patient in my office that I think may have been infected a couple of days ago. All right, this has been going on for at least, well, definitely out and about, and really just something that we as Americans need to pay attention to for about 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks. And now they're just sending this little email blast about what you do, call this number. Well, what about really having a concerted call-in that we as doctors should call in and actually know really what to expect, how to help contain this? It's like it's just no one's minding the story here, it seems. It's all after the fact, and don't worry, we know what we're doing. We got this. That's their attitude. I don't think that's appropriate. I just really find that what?
You bring up a very good point. I walk in, I've been exposed, and maybe I'm even systematic at this point, or symptomatic, I should say. And I walk in because I've got congestion, and I had a nosebleed, and I've got congestion, and I want to see you. And I realize that you're not going to see me without rubber gloves on. But at what point does a doctor or the nurse or your other help in your office, somebody walks in off the street, what do you do? I mean, you would be almost instantly infected.
We are on the front line, and especially primary care, ENTs, anybody who does upper respiratory infections with fever and cough. It's potentially just a it can get out of control very quickly. And you have people who are traveling still. They've yet to stop flights in earnest from these countries that are affected. My first take was stop the flights, quarantine the country so that you don't have people leaving until they've been stopped and actually held for 21 days so that you know that they're not carrying the virus. None of that's been going on until now. Sub Guinea, I think, has done a really good job now, but it's already out from Guinea. It's already out from Sierra Leone. I mean, they're now closing the door after the fact. It only takes one person. Apparently, they found the patient zero, a little boy, in Guinea who infected his grandmother and his mother. And from there, it just grew from one person to over 1,000 people in five countries. Actually, maybe more now because we're talking about people in, well, Germany has now had one of the people coming in who's passed away. England had another infected person. Canada, one of the doctors came through. He's self-quarantining. I mean, we're talking about a global travel. International travel is just so, it's so layered. It's so many stopovers, so many transfers. I mean, it's just, they didn't really pay attention to this, it seems. And now, as if they know that they've already lost control, now they're telling people, don't worry about it. When they should be saying, now we really need to hunker down and be aware of this so we can stop it as fast as possible. It's like they want this almost to play out and then have the answer down the road. I mean, they're now working on vaccines, which are going to be available. We heard Fast Track in 2015, and this ZMAP, which people, it's like almost like an anti-serum that they're taking, that the two patients at Emory have had, and apparently a priest from Spain had it as well. Unfortunately, he just passed away. So we're just getting little trips and drabs of this thing. But I think that when people show up at the hospitals and they've traveled to these countries, and they say, oh, it can't be that, I just have a question, and they just drop off the front page. You don't hear anything more about it, like the patient in Mount Sinai. And there's one in Ohio. We're not hearing anything. So just, you know, it's not about panic. It's about protection. And before we go back to core curriculum, I want to make sure that people understand, you know, the best way you can arm yourself is to stay healthy. That's number one. And so now it's really time to protect yourself and your family by doing some, just making some lifestyle choice changes. Watch what you eat. Maybe you want to start now getting more organic foods into your diet. You know, really being careful to clean your diet out so you're not eating so much processed food, so much sugar. You know, if you're now taking vitamins, and the last report again that stated that vitamins don't work, I totally disagree with that. The food supply has been depleted of nutrients because it's been farmed, and corporate-driven farming has just messed up the food supply. So I think you do need to take supplements, things like vitamin D, vitamin D3 specifically, great antiviral, helps boost the immune system. Generally, we've been now told you can't be in the sun because of skin cancer. So the vitamin D deficiency is running rampant in our country. We need that. So I would recommend that. Things like zinc, which is also a mineral that we don't have enough of in our diet. You can add that. Probiotics are excellent because we eat so much sugar and we're eating a genetically modified food diet, a lot of us. We don't have the proper flora that can protect us from getting sick. So take a probiotic. It's really simple. And it's cheap. We don't have to go through millions of dollars to stay healthy. It's just, instead of picking up something that we shouldn't have, let's go for something that we should. It's just choices. And if we can stay healthy, and if we can wash our hands, that's a big deal. And I don't mean with those gels with the alcohol base, but soap and water. Because those gels, some have been shown to affect the endocrine system, like your thyroid, your sex hormones, etc. And they do, the alcohol gets absorbed into the skin, so basically soap and water works really well. But the fact that most viruses and infection is passed when you touch your face, you touch your eyes, you touch your nose, can pick your nose, so to speak. Those are the way these things get into us. So if we keep our hands clean, that's going to give us a lot of ammunition to stay healthy. Right, so there's things that you can do that won't break the bank. Go to farmers markets. Now start to really make positive choices instead of what's easy, because you don't want to get this. And there's not 100% that you're going to get it, even if it enters the country. But you can certainly decrease your risk of getting it and succumbing to it if you have an excellent foundation. You know, your foundation or your body is your temple. I think you need to start thinking about it that way.
You know, they had mentioned the fact of the doctor responding to the antiviral, I guess, or whatever he was given.
Mm-hmm.
But they also mentioned the fact that because he was in good shape, that his own immune system was superior to the folks that were not in good shape or mm-hmm. Suffering from malnutrition and so forth. So that's exactly to your point. If we stay in good shape, we may, unfortunately, there's always the potential of getting something, but no matter what it is, if you're in good shape, you can fight it off better than someone that's not in good shape.
Absolutely. And unfortunately, the areas that always get hit first in these countries are the rural, poor areas where the people are really just struggling just to survive, basically, and they get decimated by this. So if we can really just arm ourselves from a nutritional point of view, that makes a big difference. And things that doctors have been preaching forever, like lower the stress in your life, get sleep, and these are not stupid things, actually. They actually do help rev your immune system. And sleeping 7 to 8 hours a night, I have to say, when you get into deep REM sleep, when you're in the most medicinal side of sleep, that's when your immune system revs up. That's when your body's actually protecting you. So if you actually don't get there, your body's always under stress. Your thyroid, your adrenal gland get totally overworked, and it can't ramp up to actually help fight infection. So it puts you at risk. It makes you a target, sitting duck, for whatever wants to come through, whether that's a virus, whether it's cancer, whether it's a bacterial infection. So it's drink water that's clean. If you can take fluoride out, that's awesome, because it's not, doesn't really add anything to water. It certainly doesn't stop tooth decay. We've pretty much figured that out. Ask any dentist, really. So if you can start filtering your water, just start putting things in that are going to help you instead of inhibit your body from helping itself. Smoking is there's nothing good about smoking. Alcohol in moderation. It's just now, it's time to really do the things that you've promised yourself you would, or your doctor, basically tells you every time you come for a visit you need to make some changes. Now it's time to do it, because we don't know what's going to happen. We talk about people coming in on planes, but you now have the south border, which is wide open, though we don't know what's coming through or who's coming through. And we already know that there are communicable diseases coming in, like TB and swine flu and foot and mouth disease, you name it, but we don't know what else can come through with it. And there are not only Central American people coming in. I've heard stories now where Chinese are coming in. They're paying to be brought into this pipeline so they can come into the south border too. There's people from Africa who also come in through the South American connection and up into the country. So the fact that we don't have anybody looking, nobody checking, could be a free-for-all down there for all we know. What we don't know that's going to hurt us, not what we do. So you can control yourself. You can control what your family eats. Highly recommend now that you do that.
With that, let's take our second break. We'll be back with Medicine on Call right after this.
For years, Peachtree Ear, Nose, and Throat Center has been providing outstanding care to patients of all ages. They are dedicated to patient satisfaction and have been the recipient of the Georgia Otolaryngology Association Patient Satisfaction Award. They welcome any questions you may have about their services. Their practice includes treatment of asthma, allergies, sleep apnea, snoring, hearing impairments, and chronic sinus disease. Dr. Elena George is a board-certified ear, nose, and throat surgeon. Her training in New York has included training at Manhattan Eye, Ear, and Throat Hospital and Memorial Sloan Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. She believes in practicing both the art and science of medicine. All patients are seen by Dr. George. All treatment options are discussed, and time will be spent to answer all questions. Their office is located in Atlanta at 1776 Peachtree Road in Suite 260 North Tower, two blocks south of Piedmont Hospital. They are open Monday through Friday, 8:30 a.m. until 4 p.m. Additional details are available at www.peachtreeentcenter.com. At Peachtree Ear, Nose, and Throat Center, you can be confident that you are in good hands with their professional team.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
This is Dr. Elena George with your health tip of the day. Did you know skipping doses of medication can be dangerous? If you have a chronic medical condition like diabetes or high blood pressure, it's important to take the medication prescribed by your physician. It is also important to remember that although you take a medicine to treat a condition, it is not a cure for the underlying medical condition. It is used to control it. For example, taking medication for diabetes will lower your blood sugar. However, if you stop taking the medication, the sugar will rise again. Changes in both diet and lifestyle, like adding exercise to your routine, are equally important. Working with your physician by following his or her recommendations is the key to controlling your disease and maintaining your health. Ask questions if you don't understand something. Taking control of your health is the key to wellness. Please join me Wednesdays at 9 a.m. for Medicine on Call. This is Dr. Elena George.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
You're listening to America's Web Radio and Medicine on Call. I'm going to turn it back to Dr. George for a moment and get some information that's just been phoned in to me, as a matter of fact.
So, but just getting back to the connection between the Ebola virus and the core curriculum, it seems like they'd be totally like non sequitur. But I'm one of those folks who like to think about think ahead and how everything's been played out before this. You know, the healthcare system now has been concertedly centralized, where the government and evidence-based medicine and best practice, which we talked about many times on the show before, where we have algorithms that are being created so that doctors, nurses, anybody in the healthcare profession is now being told how to treat diseases. It used to be voluntary. It's now becoming more and more rigid. And one of the things that have been really just really ingrained in docs at this point is that things like vaccines, things like medications that are used instead of nutraceuticals, instead of supplements, they're now being demonized to such a degree that if you do choose that, you actually can run afoul of having a relationship with your doctor. And I'll give you an example. A friend of mine, this is personal now, I've read about it, but now it's happened to somebody that I know, that they went for their child with their child to the pediatrician to get a checkup. And the pediatrician recommended the slate of vaccines or immunizations, I should say. And she said that she didn't want to give one particular immunization to her child. And she got fired from the practice. So basically the pediatrician said, if you don't take the shot, then I can't treat you anymore. You need to leave the practice. I've never heard of anything like that. I mean, we're now in a position where if the patients don't follow the mandates that are set on from the centralized command control grid, then they can literally be removed from a practice. What's the next thing? Take the child, because they call in defects because she's gone against what the doctor says the child needs, and now the parent becomes a bad parent. I mean, this is the level that we're at now, where the parents are losing control of what happens with their child's body. Common Core is another example on the opposite side, on the education side, where homeschooling has become pretty much outlawed, you know, de facto, where parents are now being, first, it's kind of soft, given a curriculum that's still the same curriculum as what's going on in school, but there are other parents who are really fighting just to be able to keep their child home so they can have control over their education. And the school boards, the local authorities, are stepping in and breaking that bond between the parent and the child, just completely breaking it. Either you go to school or we're going to come and step in and stop it. This is not a system that people, when they think about, you know, a shared curriculum across the country, think is happening. And the core curriculum is like medicine at this point. It's not about what you know. It's not about using your knowledge and using critical thinking to apply it to an individual case. It's not like that anymore. It's about taking tests to figure out your proficiency in it's taking a test to find out how to take a test almost. And you're not learning very much. I mean, the math that 2 plus 2 is 4 is no longer there. You get to decide what the answer is based on a consensus between students. So there is no right answer. And they're not trying to tell people that math really it was kind of created. And it's not based in fact. It's based in theory. So you can come up with whatever number you want to come up with. This is not educating anybody to actually be an individual. And ultimately, what it's going to come down to is you're going to school to be taught to be something that society needs. Fill a job role. Be a cog in a wheel, basically. And medicine is now going down that same exact path where doctors no longer get to decide. As soon as you enter that hospital, protocols go into play. They give you an antibiotic immediately and to prevent the MRSA, which is the resistant staph organism. They give you a complete, if you're diabetic, complete algorithm of expensive drugs, you know, preventative measures that you may not need. And these are all just a grid. You can't even, if you're using electronic medical records, sometimes change these because they are actually set as a standard that you cannot go, you can't erase, you can't add these, you can't change things. And you wonder why the healthcare costs in this country are so high, because it's a one-size-fits-all model now. If you don't fit in, then if you're a doctor, you will be out of the system pretty quickly. Either you'll self-select out, or they'll get rid of you by peer review, or just fire you outright, you know, just downsize. I mean, this is not what people are signing up for, and Obamacare is literally ushered it in with the promise of everybody gets equal health care, they'll pay less, they'll get whatever they like. It's never going to happen. And now people are realizing that, you know, I signed up for this, I can't even afford to go to see the doctor. And I can tell you now on the flip side what's happening. If you are able to afford Obamacare, you actually get to see a doctor. This is what happens after this happens. Your claim gets denied. Either they'll tell you that it's not medically necessary, or what will happen is you'll get your pre-certification after the doctor has done the test or done the procedure or seen you at the office visit. They'll deny it after the fact, saying that it's not covered. That's our reality, and that's the patient reality. And I have two people who, by mistake, we ended up in our office under Obamacare because we believe what the insurance company said, and now both of them are looking, after they've been denied, to get out of their current Obamacare plan and move on to something that's actually going to be insurance. I mean, I can't even make stuff up. It's just so crazy.
You know, Dr. George, when you talk about crazy, and I know what a big fan you are of EMR, Dr. Michael Karacek, during one of the shows, was talking about EMR and that it just happened. He had written, I'm sure you know him, he's an ENT as well, and he had written a script, and it came back from the pharmacy that they had denied the script that he had written, mm-hmm. And gave him that it wasn't in the formulary, and that they gave him four choices. And he said he looked at them, and he said, "You know, I'm just not familiar with these." So he went to the big book and looked them up, and one of them was for male hormones, and the other three were for blood pressure, to lower your blood pressure medicines. And he said, you know, he's in a big practice, but he said, you know, in a lot of practices, an assistant or even a nurse might take a look, and it would be their choice, and you think what's coming from the pharmacy is right. And they'd circle one, and that would be what was given to the patient, that maybe the last thing they need is blood pressure-lowering medicine that could be extremely harmful to lethal. And he said, this is, you know, it was a situation, the person entering the information made a mistake, garbage in, garbage out. And,
exactly.
You know, this, if it's happened once on a very local basis, local to us anyway, how many other times is it happening across the country? And this
That's
is
a
the
very good point.
Great Obama system, the great Obamacare and electronic medical records that could kill.
Listen, the medical records are only as good as the person who enters the information. And, you know, let's talk about this realistically. This is not him. He didn't make this. This is now what's been going on throughout the world. We are now just entering this globalized system called ICD-10. And so this is couched as his and this Congress, but it's bigger than them. All they did is sign on to the UN Agenda 21 system, UNESCO, of standardizing health, education, everything is just being standardized and being driven from a central location. It's not individualized anymore. It's not about the person. It's not about actually allowing somebody to actually treat somebody using their Hippocratic Oath. I mean, this has been going on for years, Dave. We've had people on talking about things in pieces where Dr. Orient came on and said that students in her school no longer take the Hippocratic Oath. People in England, for example, I think there's maybe 1 or 2% of the medical schools that still take the Hippocratic Oath. The rest either don't or they've changed it in such a way that it's okay now to kill people. It's okay now to do abortion. It's okay now to euthanize. You know, it's changed. It's like relative ethics, relative morality, because it's all about cost. And if it's going to cost the collective too much money, and you're no longer productive, you've lived out your productive lives, you can't pay into the system, and you're just going to start using the services, then you become less valuable. Rahm Emanuel's brother didn't just make this up out of whole cloth. This is a mindset that people are just things. They're not valuable unless they can produce something that's going to help the system run. That's the mindset. And there's somebody who wrote an article in England about how they should kill people when they get old, when they get to be senior citizens, and it's a good thing to do that. That's the mindset. This is a very ghoulish system. Wrap it in, we love you, we want everybody to be the same, the rich are taking from the poor, you know, that's what they're wrapping this in, but you need to really, and everybody needs to take a step back. You cannot get something for nothing. If you don't put skin in the game in some way, pay into the system, be able to make your own choices, someone will choose for you, and they're never going to choose in your favor. It's not about you, it's about them. So unless people figure this out quickly, and that means everywhere, whether it's your child in school, whether it's your politician, whether it's your doctor, you're going to end up on the short end of the stick. I don't understand why people, I think maybe people figure out something's wrong, but they can't figure out exactly what it is.
With that being said, let people think about that for a couple of minutes. We'll be back right after this.
This is Dr. Elena George with your health tip of the day. Did you know that dizziness may be a sign of heart disease, iron deficiency, high or low blood pressure, low blood sugar, or an inner ear infection? Dizziness can take the form of a spinning sensation, also known as vertigo, or a feeling of lightheadedness. The individual can also feel faint or have a rapid heartbeat. If you take high blood pressure medication, remember to take the medication daily as directed to control your blood pressure. Diabetics must remember to eat after taking their medication and to eat at regular intervals. If you have anemia, make sure to take a multivitamin that contains iron and to eat vegetables such as spinach. Dizziness after a cold or flu may be due to a virus. If you have dizziness, it is important to see your doctor for a complete physical examination. Please join me Wednesdays at 9 a.m. for Medicine on Call. This is Dr. Elena George.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
Come on, follow Sniffles to Atlanta's go-to center for breathing easy. Do you suffer from chronic sinus headaches, recurrent sinusitis, facial pain or pressure, and chronic congestion? Well, balloon sinuplasty just could be the cure you're looking for.
Follow me and breathe easy.
Follow Sniffles.com. We treat the problem, not the symptom. Chronic sinus symptoms, gone. This could be the cure you're looking for.
Follow me and breathe easy.
This proven in-office procedure can have you breathing easy, back to work the next day, and it's done under local anesthesia. Get lasting relief, a quick recovery, and start breathing easy again.
Follow me and breathe easy.
Follow Sniffles.com.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
And we're back on Medicine on Call with Dr. Elena George, and it's always, you don't know what these shows mean, and people listening to us and listening not to us but to you, and the insight that they get from your perspective, and I sit here and it's like I'm like a sieve or something that I listen to what you say, and I'm at the same time I'm trying to compare it against what we hear or we get spoon fed or we get lied to by the media and by our politicians, and you know, it's just we've got to continue to keep putting out the truth. And by the way, with that being said, we're going to be starting a new show next Thursday. I don't even know the name of it yet, but it's going to be about the lies and the blackmail and extortion that the EPA has put on not only the general public but those involved in the natural resource industry. That, you know, we could be totally self-sufficient just given our resources. We don't need out-of-country resources. We've got plenty. Just leave us alone to get them. And it's going to be a very interesting weekly show.
Well, you know what? I want to actually piggyback on that thought. In my opinion, this is all about creation of false lack in every part of our society. We've gone from having doctors who mostly hang on their own shingles, open their practices, and it was an individualized, independent system, and people got in the same day. The prices were reasonable. You saw your doctor. They knew you. They knew your family. We've moved from that to a system that's now being driven by call centers and big hospital corporate-driven entities that have Pac-Maned all of these, as many as they could anyway, individual practices, community hospitals, every healthcare system that was being driven on a local level that provided service to the community is now gone centrally. And what they've managed to do is make the system more expensive, less productive, and dangerous. I am in a position now as a doctor that I'm being asked on, when I take call, to do things that are outside of my scope of practice. That's not someplace that I want to be. And think about that. If I'm just one ENT, that happens throughout the country. And the flip side of this is people come into these ERs in these hospitals that are connected to the major hospital, and people don't know what a call center is. But what that means is you walk into the small little hospital that's connected to the big center hospital, there's a switchboard. Whoever sees you in that emergency room, who doesn't know how to take care of you, gets to call a switchboard and then gets transferred to a doctor or a specialist or whatever in the major hospital. And then they take your care. They basically said, well, send them over to us and we'll take care of them. Meanwhile, I come to find out that once you enter that system, you get double billed, okay? Because when you go up to that small hospital and they evaluate your chest pain or your bloody nose and they can't handle it, they still get to charge you, even though they didn't even treat you, to the main hospital. Then they charge you again. And, you know, listen, if it's chest pain and you should be traveling for hours in an ambulance, put in an ambulance, by the way, that's another charge, to come to the hospital to get care, you've lost time on your treatment. You know, is this really appropriate care just because the corporate-driven system has decided we want to ace out the competition, we want to remove anybody who's going to compete against us? And I've spoken about this with surgery centers. The community surgery centers are a fraction of the cost compared to going to the hospital. I don't care if it's an outpatient or inpatient. They've managed in Atlanta, and I know it's like a cookie cutter all across the country, to close as many surgery centers as they can that are competition, so you have to come to them. Well, that's different when it's elective and it's outpatient. What happens when it's emergency? And you have, like for me, an ENT, an airway emergency where someone has a cancer blocking their windpipe and they can't breathe. Is it appropriate to put them in an ambulance and take them all the way into centralized hospital system, 45 minutes, an hour drive in an ambulance or helicopter, when they could have that care in the facility that they ended up in? That's how the system used to run. But because greed and stupidity and complete lack of respect, let's be honest, this is a lack of respect for both the doctor and the patient. The doctor is the cost driving center, and the patient is the cost center itself. That's what they see us as. It's get them in, get them out, see more patients, get them in, make sure you chart it right, because if you don't, we won't get paid. And it's just that. And the patients, you know, we can't treat you because you're too expensive for our hospital, just send you to a bigger place. It's ridiculous. And if we actually had a system that allowed people to go to a hospital that was fully staffed, with everybody on call that should be, ENT, GYN, neurosurgery, general surgery, you know, the major players need to be on call. If you have an ER, you can't have an ER run by primary care docs who can't handle anything more than a cold. You can't do that. That's what's going on. When you, I've said this to patients, you don't want to go into an ER anymore. You want to go to an urgent care run by ER-trained physicians, because what you're getting are PAs, nurse practitioners, and doctors who don't know ER medicine. They know what they can't do, and then they just try to flail until they get you to somewhere that can. That's where people are missing the boat, because the quality of care has dropped. I can't put it any more bluntly than that. And if we, just like with food, if you keep going to these systems and driving them, they will not change. How you do this, if you stop using it, if you can, go to an urgent care, go to an independent doctor. Make them know that you can't just treat me like dirt and I'm still going to come back for more. I'm going to go to somebody who's going to treat me correctly, not gouge me, fix my problem without 1,000 tests because I don't know what I'm doing. And that's how the system will change. Opt out. Opt out of Obamacare. Don't buy these crappy insurance plans where they're just going to deny you after the fact and tell you that you should like it. Go to something like Liberty HealthShare. Go to Aflac. Go to systems that are not being driven by money, that are not making money on your misery. That's what's going on. And unless people make that decision, and I know that education is not quite the same because people don't have money to go to private school, but for God's sake, go to your parent-teacher meeting. Go to your PTA. Go and meet the teachers who are taking care of your kids and let them know, like my parents did when I was a kid, You're going to teach my child, and she's going to go to the best school in this country, and I'm watching you. That's what they did, and it was a different mindset. Those teachers did not play when they knew the parents were on board. Same thing goes everywhere else in your life. Unless you take control and your power back, you will be a victim of some sort in every aspect of your life. That's the key. Once you do that, you don't live in fear, and you don't let people tell you what to think. You don't let people control your choices, because that's what's happening. They're telling you you don't have a choice and you should like it. You have a choice. Start voting with your pocketbook, with your mouth, with your feet, and the system stops. They want you to be a cattle drive. They want you not to think and just mindlessly do what they tell you. And even when the outcome isn't what they say it's going to be, it's like, you didn't see that didn't happen. I mean, it's just like, it's amazing.
Dr. George, I want to throw out my warning, and please clarify if I misstate anything. But anyone that has to go to the hospital, going through an ER or any admission, be sure that you're going into the hospital for treatment, not for observation. The insurance companies have a sneaky way of saying, well, we'll pay for treatment if you're hospitalized. But if you're just there overnight for observation, it's your bill to pay.
Well, and they want to put you in observation first because it's the hospital makes more money. You know, it's about designating whether you're an inpatient, an observation, or ambulatory. It's all numbers. It's all, you know, metadata. And that's what you become. So unless you have an advocate in your corner, you won't really navigate the system well. You'll end up owing what you think you don't owe. Or you may not make it because they just decided, oh, we're just going to put you in hospice. This is not appropriate. And this is what's happening across the country. This is the new paradigm of medicine. And the government is involved with it, sanctioning it, and actually fermenting it to happen because they're deciding who wins and who loses. Any doctor, and I should say, I know it's a blanket statement, but I'm going to say it anyway. If your doctor stopped taking Medicaid or Medicare, you should be happy. And you should stay with that doctor because that doctor has decided, I care about my Hippocratic Oath and I want to treat my patients and I want them to get better. I don't want someone to decide for me and my patient how I treat them. That's the distillation of what's going on. If you are healthy enough to pick a doctor and not be, you know, God forbid you have multiple medical problems, I understand why you have to stay in the system. But if you don't, opt out now and save yourself.
And pass it on. Be sure and pass it on to your friends, your neighbors, your family members, and all that. Well, Dr. George, we have come to the end of the line for this morning, and I appreciate it as always. It's always very informative, and thank you for everything that you're doing. And folks need to know there is, Dr. Elena George is fighting for you, and she's doing a heck of a job.
Thank you. And thanks for listening, everybody.
We'll see you next week. Medicine on Call here on America's Web Radio.
This is America's Web Radio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.